All right, thank you, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalka. Hold the portfolio for damage prevention, pipeline safety. We're here today for an informal on case number GS15705 to talk about the proposed settlement agreement. My colleague and chair of the commission, Commissioner Julie Fedorchak, is delayed because of winter storm travel. So she's somewhere between Denver and Dickinson, and so she will not be joining us today. She'll listen to the tape later. Commissioner Crispin, do you have any opening comments, sir?
I do not, but thank you.
Okay. Well, I guess my only comments would be the we've got members here. We'll go on the table and take two cases. Oh, yes. Thank you, Pat. GS15705 and GS15711. Thank you, Pat, for making sure I listed both cases. So let's just go on the table and take who's all here, starting with Craig.
Craig Reiman, Pipeline Safety Inspector.
Aaron Mormon, Pipeline Safety Program Manager.
John Hsu, Commission Staff.
Eric Sanger with Montana Dakota.
Carl Liepitz with Montana Dakota Council. And we do have two on the phone, too, who can introduce themselves.
Mike Shep with Montana Dakota.
And joining us on the phone today?
Pat Darris, MDU.
Okay, thank you.
And Danny Hood, MDU.
All right, perfect. Well, who wants to start? Garrett, Aaron, Carl, Jack, who kick it off? Jack, is our legal counsel for the...
I'm just going to start it up, and then I'll tee it up over to Mr. Mormon here to explain it. So we're essentially here for as a result of two audits, the Heartland region and the Badlands region. In the Badlands region, there were two alleged violations, and in the Heartland region, there was one. And Aaron Mormon, our program director, he filed notice of probable violation accordingly on both of them. And we've gone through a number of discussions, and I think we've come to agreement, a settlement agreement at this point in time. And I'll toss it over to Mr. Mormon to give a brief description of the penalties and as well as the violations.
Okay. What we had found in case 15-705, it was an isolation valve in Bowman, North Dakota, that had not been checked and serviced within the required time according to Federal Code Part 192. And then also... We found that the valve had been not checked and serviced. It had been checked, but it hadn't been serviced during the required times of one calendar year, not to exceed 15 months. Since that time, the valve has been repaired, is operational. One of the questions we had was whether there was alternative means or alternative valves, which is what is required in the case. But there's an alternative valve needed to isolate the system if we, you know, should happen to have a problem. And we had a little issue. We didn't clearly find where it was stated that there was a specific alternative valve designated. And in the case, in case 15711, this was a valve number 637 in Bismarck. It was found to be inoperable. With the meetings we had an informal hearing December of 2015, and it was explained that there were alternative valves that could be used at the time. It was not specifically listed on the inspection form when we looked at it during our inspection. So that has been fixed since that. That issue has been remedied, and I guess that's where we sit on the situation right now, and I think we've come to an agreement on what we're looking at as a proposed civil penalty on both of these cases.
Aaron, did you think that for the first one, that was it a fact that they didn't check it at all, or was the paperwork not correct showing they checked it? Was it a paperwork, quote-unquote, mistake, or was it they actually didn't look at the valve?
On the paperwork that we looked at, we had seen that there was an inspection done on it, and it was found, it was covered, the valve was covered, the valve box, and they were unable to operate it, to operate or service the valve. And then at that point, there was nothing done on it. And then again, later on in the year, there was a notation done on the same inspection form that it was checked again, but still nothing had been done. So it was our determination that the valve had not been checked and serviced as is required.
Okay. And kind of jumping around here a little bit, if it's okay with you guys, Jack and Garrett, I think it's easiest for me anyway, based on what Aaron said, do you think anything materially you guys would disagree with that? I know it's a settlement agreement, but just out of curiosity to see what your thoughts would be of that.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Factually, I think what was stated is accurate. We agree with that. Just maybe a little more perspective on the Bowman, and really with both valves. You know, with Bowman, we had two inspection reports that occurred over that period of time. The inspection reports were provided to the operations team and included in our sectionalizing plan, which, you know, Mike can expand on what that means exactly. In the case of the Bismarck valve, once that valve was inspected and deemed to be not operable, the operations team was notified. There was not a separate inspection report that went along with that valve. But so from the company's perspective, we had taken necessary steps to make sure that our team knew that that valve was not available. And in the event of an emergency or an immediate need to shut off the gas flow, the team knew that there would be alternate methods that would be utilized. And so as we interpret that regulation, you know, the regulation says you have to designate an alternate valve. It doesn't actually say in writing. So I think our team, at least in good faith, felt that by taking the steps that they had with the inspection reports, with the notification to the operations team, and with inclusion of that in the sectionalization plan, they had effectively designated alternate means to shut off the gas.
Now that's for the second one. What about the first one, the first probable violation, the Bowman one?
With the Bowman?
Yeah, has that been, how did you make sure that won't happen again?
Well, so at the time we had the two inspection reports, right, and that occurred, you know, several months apart, and had you know, taken those steps of notifying operations and including it with the sectionalization plan. But I think we've agreed collaboratively that there was maybe a different interpretation of the regulation. And so part of the consent agreement, we've agreed to modify the operation and maintenance plan so that on a go-forward basis, if this would occur, we will designate in writing, you know, what that alternate method is or what the alternate valve is. And so I think that's kind of how we bridge that gap and maybe the difference of opinion on that regulation itself.
Maybe I'm not understanding the two violations then, because the first one, to me, the second one talks about did not designate an alternate valve. So you're saying that's the same kind of error in the first problem too?
Yeah, with the
two. So why doesn't the violation read the same for both of them, that they didn't designate an operational valve? I'm not understanding that.
On the first one, we did not think that it was clearly presented to us which valve or means would be used as an alternative means.
Okay.
In the second one, it was a little more clearly laid out as to which valves in the Bismarck system would be used. So the Bismarck one, to me, you know, Craig worked with me on this too, but to me it was more clearly specified in the Bismarck one which one was designated or which ones could be designated. Where in the Bowman case, it really wasn't clearly specified. I know it was mentioned that it was put in the sectionalizing plan, but that was something that was just not clear to us, which specific means or valve would be used in the Bowman one.
Okay. Fair enough.
Would it be helpful if Mike explained maybe?
Yeah, I'm not quite catching what you're throwing down there. It sounds like a similar kind of challenge, but the violations are written up differently.
The Bismarck valve is on a higher pressure system, and basically it's from one point through the town, and this valve was kind of in between two other valves. The two other valves.
And the Bismarck valve you're talking is probable violation two?
Two.
Okay, make sure we're clear.
Yep, and basically in the Bismarck system, the valve that was not operable was between two other sectionalizing valves, so if you take that valve out of operation, these two other valves can take its place.
Got it.
And then the Bowman one is on the medium pressure system, which there's more valves in there that could do the same thing, but they're not as straightforward, I guess. They're more looped and spread apart. So it can't do the same process in that system.
So that's why you wrote, Jack, back to you, that's why you wrote up the violation one for Bowman, more of the safe operation, and you didn't designate the discussion about alternate valve?
I'm not sure exactly which violations we're talking about, because we have two notice of probable violations, and we have probable violation number one for the Heartland. I think that's the Bismarck that we're talking about. And then, so I was a little bit confused. We were talking about probable violation two from the first, the Badlands region notice of probable violation, Commissioner.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understand what you guys are telling me. Okay.
Yeah, in case 15705, there were two probable violations written up.
Okay.
Yeah. 711 had one probable violation.
Okay, that's the mistake I'm not catching. Okay, I'm tracking again.
And just to clarify, Commissioner, at the time of their actual records audit, they had already essentially taken remedial action. They actually did, at that time, check and service the key valves, and the work to be done on probable violation two for the Badlands region has actually, I believe, already been resolved and put in place. Is that in the manual this time?
Yeah, it will be implemented here by the end of the year.
Okay.
Okay, I understand now. Gotcha.
And there was construction that covered the Alva contract or something?
I see. Okay.
In the Bowman one, yes. The Bowman 705 valve was actually paved over the curb box to access the valve. So when we went to it, it was covered with pavement. And the assumption was the contractor that was paving the road would take the asphalt off and, you know, as they normally do, and raise the valve to match the permanent surface. Well, that wasn't done in the process when we came the second time. So
then you had to coordinate.
Yep, we did the work after that and raised it up so it's accessible.
I think the only thing I'd add to that is, you know, in both situations, I think the company's very confident that at no time was the safety of the system or to the public compromised in any way. And, you know, so we're certainly supportive of the resolution that we've presented in the settlement agreement. And we'd certainly ask for approval of that if it meets the commission's requirements.
Randy, do you have any questions?
Not so far.
So when it comes to the actual civil penalty, what do you believe, MDU, that you're quote-unquote admitting to of the three probable violations that I made a mistake on before I was saying two? Just to clarify, because is it kind of just a lump sum you think this is, or do you want to break those out that into more or less with one of the potential violations than the other, or just?
Yeah, I don't know if you want to speak to that, Ms. Mortman. There's a breakdown of the penalty of like $1,000 for one, $1,000 for another, and then $7,000 something for the third.
Really, some of that's maybe not the paperwork that I'm not looking at then.
Yes, Commissioner. Normally with a notice of probable violation, there is some sort of penalty amount that is essentially a base amount that's assessed, and from there the mitigation factors come into consideration, and that's what Mr. Mortman took under advisement. And I think to what Mr. Lipitz was saying, he did find that largely due to the fact that MDU's history as a safe operator, and as well as they were very responsive to changes, and he also felt at this, from my understanding, my conversations with him, that there wasn't a substantial danger to any of the citizens in the system, that he felt that this amount was appropriate. And why don't I let Mr. Mormon break down for each violation, what penalty amount that he felt that he mitigated that assessment to?
Yeah, for the first violation, let me see, make sure I've got these straight here.
Let me start with GS 15705. There's two probable violations that he alleged in that notice of probable violation.
Which one you start with, Jack?
15705.
705, okay.
Got it.
For the probable violation number one, we had proposed a civil penalty of $5,000. This was a penalty that we had come up with. You know, we wanted to probably show that, you know, it is a serious situation. We want to, you know, we attached that amount to it, but considering MDU's cooperation with us in the past in settling issues that may have been a concern, I had proposed dropping this to 20% of that original amount, which would then be $1,000 versus $5,000. And in the second one, where it had been out of or had not been checked and serviced for a period of 358 days, and we used that same $100 per day, which came to a total of $35,800 for the total. And due to the same reasoning that they have been cooperative with working us with us in the past, we reduced that one to 20% also, which came in at $7,160. And for the situation on number 711, that was the same type of a situation, basically the same kind of a concern that we had, and we reduced that one also to 20%, which went from $5,000 to $1,000. So the total amount between the two cases comes out to $9,160.
Well, Mr. Mormon, this wasn't just a matter of just past cooperation. This was much more. This is had to do with a lot with the responsiveness as well to the actual violations. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. And the fact that they are going to be making changes to their O&M plan to reflect more clearly in the future something like this happens upon discovery or when they find a valve that may be non-operational, inoperable, that they will designate an alternative valve or alternative means of isolating the system or systems.
In writing. That'll be, yep.
In writing.
It's required to be in writing.
In the O&M plan.
As we modify the O&M plan.
Exactly.
I don't have a problem with what the settlement agreement at all. I'm just trying to make sure that all the things have been buttoned up. So the settlement agreement itself is filed. What about these two documents that we just went through? Where are those filed? I guess they're filed somewhere, but how do they tie into what the settlement agreement is?
Which documents are you specifically?
I'm looking at the filings, GS-15705, and the ones that we just walked through that show the breakdown of how you got from what was recommended, and then nowhere in there that I said how you got to the actual fine that you could point me to other than what your explanation is.
Sure.
Does it say anywhere in here that how you got to that?
Commissioner, the notice of probable violations are actually cited within this settlement agreement, and well as they should be in the docket.
I see that part of it, and I see the final amount that the company agrees to, but walk me through where in the settlement agreement it says how you got down to that.
The first sentence on the second page, you could see that that's where the citation is. See notice of probable violation on that date. And after the next one, too, it says see the notice of probable violation on November 2nd, 2015. And so the notice of probable violations have been docketed, isn't that right?
Yes.
And so any sort of reference to the settlement agreement can be referenced to that docket number as well as to finding a justification, Commissioner.
So to Aaron's testimony, what he just said of how they got to that number of 20%, where is that in any of this other than what he just told me?
Those are the notice of probable violations, correct?
Right.
Well, that's...
Are you talking about the factors for
mitigation? Yeah, absolutely.
That would not be the notice of problem. Maybe that might be, actually.
Here's what I'm thinking, okay? At some point in time, this will become a precedent for some case. How did you get from a $35,000 fine down to a $7,000 fine? Show me where that is at in this record other than what you just told me. So if we use this as a basis that we know how we got there.
That's a good point.
I mean, for the coal, I think thinking of the coal stuff we do or the damage prevention we do, we say we gave them X amount of credit for this, we gave them X amount of credit for that.
Mr. Foreman, I'm trying to recall, was that in the notice of probable violation itself, the actual mitigating factors that she used?
I thought it was in the original.
You guys got anything to offer in that MDU? I mean, I think you see my point, I hope.
I think a couple comments, Commissioner. One, North Dakota Century Code does provide for standards which can be considered by the commission to mitigate the penalty amounts, and those are all the things that we've talked about. We did send correspondence back to Mr. Mormon dated August 16th. That's not on the docket, but it does walk through point by point.
Let me just get right to the punch. Would you guys be willing to add something in the settlement agreement that walks how you got from, or somewhere in there that walks it down from how you got from the proposed fine down to the settled fine and talk more about the mitigating factors? Because otherwise I think there's some holes in this.
Sure, Commissioner. That would be no problem. We actually already have the documentation handy, I believe, in Mr. Mormon's files. I have seen in the past where he described the mitigation.
Yes.
So because he does have it as well as his own director files for each sort of audit, every inspection that we do have on hand. And within those files, all these things are in there. They would not be in the docket at this point in time, Commissioner.
The mitigating factors. Is that what you're talking about, Jack?
Yep.
Does that make sense to you, Randy?
It does, but my question is, I understand you would need to see it in written form, but in the context of what we're discussing, is MDU agreeable to including that?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't have any other questions.
I don't either.
Okay. So what's the process going forward? We'll need to refile an updated settlement agreement, and we can act on it the next commission meeting?
Next, Commissioner, there will just be an order adopting our actual settlements.
So if we get a settlement agreement that includes that language about how you got from A to B and the mitigating factor, I'm happy to put that on the agenda for the November 30th meeting if we can pull all that off by then.
Commissioner, what we could just do is we could place that in the docket and it could be used as administrative notice. You can use this document that we have both agreed to place in the record in making that determination and place that in the order. So we wouldn't actually need to upgrade the settlement agreement. If you would so choose, I don't think that would be too much of an issue. But
I just put it in the settlement agreement. Sure. So when that's pulled out at some point in time, it lays specifically what's in there, and it gets hard sometimes to reference all this stuff that people got to go back and look at. Unless that's a whole, I don't think that'd be too much work.
Staff would be agreeable to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that possible, though, by Wednesday?
The following Wednesday, two Wednesdays.
By November 30th.
November 30th. Yeah, that's right. That's it.
Yeah, it's good.
That would definitely be possible on November 30th.
And other than that, I just think, thank you guys. Aaron, good work out there. And for MDU, I mean, these things happen, so I'm not overly concerned about it. I'm just glad that we worked through it. And we haven't had these for a long time, and I think that you do a good job and everything. It's just a matter of sometimes things happen out there. And it reinforces you guys are actually paying attention out there. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
Nothing further to add.
All right, we'll close the informal. Thank you.